That's true.
Blog Talk Radio.
We must also realize that the problems of racial injustice and economic injustice cannot be solved without a radical redistribution of political and economic power.
We read one day, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. But if a man doesn't have a job or an income, he has neither life nor liberty and the possibility for the pursuit of happiness. He merely exists.
Estimated that we spend $322,000 for each enemy we kill in Vietnam, while we spend in the so-called war on poverty in America only about $53 for each person classified as poor.
The promises of the Great Society have been shot down on the battlefield of Vietnam, making the poor, white and Negro, bear the heaviest burdens both at the front and at home.
The other thing I want you to understand is this, that it didn't cost the nation one penny to integrate lunch counts. It didn't cost the nation one penny to guarantee the right to vote. But now we are dealing with issues that cannot be solved without the nation spending billions of dollars and undergoing a radical redistribution of economic power.
Yes, yes.
All labor has dignity.
Yes.
But you are doing another thing. You are reminding not only Memphis, but you are reminding the nation that it is a crime for people to live in this rich nation and receive starvation wages.
America's opportunity to help bridge the gulf between the haves and the have-nots. And the question is whether America will do it. There's nothing new about poverty. What is new is that we now have the techniques and the resources to get rid of poverty. And the real question is whether we have the will.
At the very same time that America refused to give the Negro any land, through an act of Congress, our government was giving away millions of acres of land in the West and the Midwest, which meant that it was willing to undergird its white peasants from Europe with an economic floor. But not only did they give the land, they built land-grant colleges with government money to teach them how to farm. Not only that, they provided county agents to further their expertise in farming. Not only that, they provided low interest rates in order that they could mechanize their farms. Not only that, today many of these people are receiving millions of dollars in federal subsidies not to farm, and they are the very people telling the black man that he ought to lift himself by his own bootstraps. Now, this is what we are faced with, and this is the reality. Now, when we come to Washington in this campaign, we are coming to get our check.
I come here tonight and plead with you. Believe in yourself and believe that you're somebody. And as I said to the group last night, nobody else can do this for us. No document,
can do this for us. No Lincolnian Emancipation Proclamation can do this for us. No Kennisonian or Johnsonian Civil Rights Bill can do this for us. If the Negro is to be free, he must move down into the inner resources of his own soul and sign with the pen and ink of self-assertive manhood his own Emancipation Proclamation. Don't let anybody take your manhood. Be proud of our heritage. As somebody said earlier tonight, we don't have anything to be ashamed of. Somebody told a lie one day. They couched it in language. They made everything black, ugly, and evil. Look in your dictionary and see the synonyms of the word black. It's always something degrading and low and sinister. Look at the word white. It's always something pure, high, and clean. But I want to get the language right tonight. I want to get the language so right that everybody here will cry out, "Yes, I'm black, I'm proud of it, I'm black and beautiful."
What is the relationship between this and the reality of the Negro masses?
Well, to leave Martin out of it for a moment. Martin's very rare, very great man. Martin's rare for two reasons, partly because just because he is, and because he's a real Christian, and he really believes in nonviolence. He's arrived at something in himself, which permits him, allows him to do it. And he still has great moral authority in the South. There's none whatever in the North. Poor Barton has gone through God knows what kind of hell to awaken the American conscience. But Barton has reached the end of his rope. There's something that Barton can't do. Barton's only one man. Barton can't solve the nation's central problem by himself. There are lots of people, lots of black people, I mean now, who don't go to church no more and don't listen to Martin, you know. And anyway, are themselves produced by civilization, which is always glorified violence, unless the Negro has a gun. So that Martin is undercut by the performance of the country. The country is only concerned.
One of the things that Dr. King talked about tonight, this is Dr. King movement tonight, we were talking about all the money that was given to these different mega churches. Come out, these churches got TV programs, they got radio programs, they get all kind of money from the federal government. They did it under Trump, and you wonder why the black church can't grow. And some of the black ministers bring those white boys to town, and they're already making millions of dollars. And they're not doing them by buying airplanes and stuff like that. This is one of the tapes where we talked about the money that was given to these different organizations. Listen.
And when the report came out of where the money went to, they did not give the specifics, exact amount. They said, oh, anywhere from 2 to 5.
Now, tell me this here. Joe Holstein got $1 million, right?
Yeah.
And what's the other church? Give me the name of that church. I'm writing them down.
The other church is the Church of Scientology. And then the last one here is the first Jeffries First Baptist Church of Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What about Jimmy Swagger down in Baton Rouge? You sure that?
Let me see. Oh, yeah, yeah.
How much is that?
I don't know if they got money. Let me see if I can look up.
And I want to know how much George Miles got. See, all the mega TV producers got to get money.
She got some money. She got, I don't know what she got. She was listed.
See, that's why when I talk about the $1 trillion flow, about the money that being taken, Trump, the reason they, look, all those mega churches, what's the other mega churches? There's a big mega church down in Atlanta. What I'm talking about? I know the pastor. Yeah, how much he got?
I don't know.
Yeah, give me the white churches. All the black churches. I know the black churches got them.
Joyce and my ministry's got $5 to $10 million.
God, what did Jimmy Swagger ministry?
They don't have them listed.
Okay, what about
I can only show you one. I can only.
Okay, what they got listed? Do they have this other boy out of Texas.
Yeah, I don't know, but to check this out. Churches and evangelical leaders tied to Trump amassed at least $7.3 million in rescue package loans.
Yeah, $7 million?
$17 million.
Okay. Jerry, I want to ask you this then. What about Billy Graham? Crusade. How much he got?
I don't know how much he got, but they was all on the list.
They was on the list?
Yeah, but I don't know. I can only...
Yeah, see you on the list.
I can only... they don't have... They don't want... The Trump men were supposed to say how much was, but they didn't. In other words, they just... They I don't know how...
They messed the paperwork up. That's what they did to hide the money. See, and those churches gave money back to Trump. And that's what made Trump so powerful, because they was like a lobby. They was like a money cash, okay?
Yeah.
See, so they didn't say nothing about the babies being taken, about the bridge being taken. None of that was said about the crusade. They ain't said nothing, because they all was involved.
40% of Protestant pastors had applied for government assistance. Smaller churches with fewer than 200 members in their congregation are much less likely.
Again.
Right.
What about the Southern Baptists? That's why, Southern Baptists.
50% of pastors at churches with more than 200 members on average apply for not. So churches, they could have got that money, but they would have had to, support Trump.
Yeah, the mega church. Now, what about the Southern Baptists? How much did they get? I know they own now.
I don't know. That one Dallas Baptist, first Baptist of Dallas. They got money. I'm just trying to look up and see what else is
That's the Southern Baptist. They got Southern Baptist.
First Baptist Church. See what else they got here.
Yeah, all of them got money.
All it had to do was for Pence. If Pence showed up at your church, he's going to need money back.
That's right. That's money.
Let me see what they got here. Which churches we see?
Big money.
Reverend Curtis Price. Church had 140 people.
What about Benny Hinn?
I don't know.
Because they got airplanes and things, you know? So the government fund them. Give them right off. One of the most things that I see. That people don't know what's happening. But this is the year of magic. This is the year
What I was saying when we were looking and doing research, all the white mega churches got big money. little bitty storefront church, little bitty black churches in Chicago, Mississippi, they suffering. Ain't nobody going to church. Them people didn't have nobody going to church, and they still was getting trillions of dollars. These mega churches that y'all send y'all money to. Benny Hinn is a millionaire. Got planes. I mean, what I'm saying, you sending your dollar to somebody that's a trillionaire, and they don't care about you. But what you started sending your money, and the government was getting them trillions of dollars during 2020 when people couldn't go to church. They were still getting money on TV, doing ads. I wish I had somebody know what I'm talking about. What I'm saying tonight with the Dr. King movement, we got to step up and do something different. You know, you got to understand, black church couldn't get it. You look black, I was talking to Sister Harry up in Minnesota. It's hard for black businesses to get any kind of loan right now. Under Biden, they kicking everything. When Trump was in, you could have a doghouse and get a loan. But now under Biden, you can't get a dime, especially you black. And the black folks put him in. I'm just treading like it is. Now, one of the things I'm talking about, where all this money gone? $6 trillion was spent over in Afghanistan, but people ain't even, the people in Afghanistan, they're foreign people. Now they bringing all of them back. What about the jobs? We pay tax, the welfare, the general assistance, the Medicare. This was happening, and the black man is still at the low of the totem pole. That's what Dr. King is talking about. See, what I'm saying, the leadership, the black leadership got to step up. You got a boy over in Los Angeles, he running, he said he don't believe in global warming. He don't believe he should have no mask. He don't believe that the virus is real. White folks put him out there. He's Uncle Tom. He out there Tomming. And I hope don't nobody follow him. Everybody know that he put out there. He give the money, put out there. That's the same thing that been happening to us. We didn't even know the stimulus money were out there. But the white folks been getting it all along. Bush didn't tell us about the stimulus money. What's going on? Obama didn't tell us about it. Obama's too busy making decisions where they can get married. Two men getting married, two women. He didn't worry about black folks. Let me leave this alone because y'all are like, this is Dr. King movement. And, you know, Dr. King and Malcolm died for the right. And still, here he is, 21. We still ain't got nothing. Still ain't got reparation. The Jews got reparation. The Koreans came in, put them in country. They got out. They got homes. They got business in the black community. You know, when you go to when you go get your wig, you go to the Korean. They got government money. You go, so, well, I'm going down here and get me a Dunkin' Donut. The Indians run that. They got a loan from the government. Well, I'm going to get me a Subway. The Indians run that. So what have the black folks accomplished besides shooting each other down like dogs? And then the only thing that is by is making it in the black community is a funeral home. The white folks got in on that. Now, you get killed, white folks will take you. Because so many being killed and shot right now. 43, ain't my police doing it. Black on black doing it. My Black Lives Matter. Now, Black Power Matter, where you can stop some of this mess. Because they ain't saying, Trump didn't say nothing about the violence. Obama didn't say nothing about it. And the Republican is playing out a Hitler playbook. Well, bitch, what did the lady ask me? She texted me just now. What is Hitler playbook? Murder, rape, racism, and giving Bibles, and trying to make a superhuman. That's Hitler playbook. If the Republicans ain't playing out of it, ain't nothing playing out, check the Republicans. They don't even want to pay to build bridges. Now, when a bridge fall, kill 4 or 5 people, they're going to holler. They don't even want to stop these guns. We don't make guns. Ain't nobody say it from the Republic. Let's stop the gun factory from making guns. Let's stop the dope from coming in here. We don't have no diplomatic community. Can't now black bring no dope in here because they can't, no diplomatic community. Ain't now black right now as I talk got no gunshots, but they got guns. Guns all over America, black on black. Kids killing kids. And the politicians won't deal with that. They deal with, hell away with Afghanistan over there. What's going on here in America? What's going on right now with blacks killing blacks? What's going on right now? If you bring all them people here to take the welfare, bring all the people to get the Social Security, bring all the people to get assistance. Ain't nobody said nothing about that. I'm going to leave it alone, y'all. Well, that ain't being prejudiced. That means that blacks need to get their share. Now, what happened in Tulsa, Oklahoma? The people in Afghanistan got $6 trillion. The people in Tulsa, Oklahoma was killed and burnt down. The government ain't gave them a dime yet. What happened in Natchez, Mississippi? All them people was killed. A dime yet. So it's letting you know that things ain't working right. Let's hear from Dr. King, because, you know, it's enough to make somebody go crazy.
What I'm saying to you this morning, my friend, even if it falls your lot to be a street sweeper, born out in sweet streets like Michelangelo painted pictures.
Well, I want to tell you, Dr. King, we've been sweeping streets long enough. It's time for us to own some streets, to own some business. That's what we need to be owning something now.
But if not, there was a day when many of the Israelites found themselves in bondage in Babylon. And there was a king of Babylon by the name of Nebuchadnezzar. You read about him a good deal in the book of Daniel, and it stands as an epic that will remain stenciled on the mental sheets of unfolding generations. Nebuchadnezzar was a mighty king. And when he ruled, he ruled. And when he issued an order, he meant business. And Nebuchadnezzar issued an order. He made a golden image, and his order was that everybody under the reign of his kingship had to bow before that golden image and worship it. Now, those of you who read the Bible remember that story. One day Nebuchadnezzar called in the judges and the governors and the sheriffs, and they had a dedicatory service for this golden image. And then he said to them, I'm instructing you to see that everybody bows before this golden image. But there were three young men around there.
Yes. Yes, sir.
One's name was Shadrach. The other one's name was Meshach. And the other name was Abednego. And they answered, and I read it from the scripture, and said to the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, we are not careful to answer thee in this manner. If it be so, our God, whom we serve, is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us out of thine hand, O king.
Yes.
But if not, be it known unto thee, O king, that we will not serve thy gods, nor worship the golden image which thou hast set up. Now I want you to notice first here that these young men practiced civil disobedience.
Yes.
Civil disobedience is the refusal to abide by an order of the government or of the state or even of the court that your conscience tells you is unjust. Civil disobedience is based on a commitment to conscience. In other words, one who practices civil disobedience is obedient to what he considers a higher law. And then there comes a time when a moral man can obey a law which his conscience tells him is unjust. And I tell you this morning, my friends, that history has moved on. Great moments have often come forth because there were those individuals in every age and every generation who were willing to say, I will be obedient to a higher law. These men were saying, I must be disobedient to a king in order to be obedient to the king. And those people who so often criticize those of us who come to those moments when we must practice civil disobedience never remember that even right here in America, in order to get free from the oppression and the colonialism of the British Empire, the nation practiced civil disobedience. For what represented civil disobedience more than the Boston Tea Party? Never forget that everything that Hitler did in Germany was legal. It was legal to do everything that Hitler did to the Jews. It was a law in Germany that Hitler issued himself that it was wrong and illegal to aid and comfort a Jew in Hitler's Germany. But I tell you, if I had lived in Hitler's Germany with my attitude, I would have openly broken that law.
Make it plain.
I would have practiced civil disobedience. And so it is important to see that there are times when a man-made law is out of harmony with the moral law of the universe. There are times when human laws are out of harmony with eternal and divine laws. And when that happens, you have an obligation to break it. And I'm happy that in breaking it, I have some good company. I have Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. I have Jesus and Socrates.
Make it plain.
And I have all of the early Christians who refused to bow. Now the second interesting point is that these men never doubted God and his power. As they did what they did, they made it very clear that they knew that God had the power to spare them. They said that to the king. Now we know that the God that we worship is able to deliver us. And that grew out of their experience. They had known God. They had experienced God in nature. They knew God as the Creator. And then they had seen God in history.
Yes. Make it plain.
And then they had seen God, I'm sure, in their personal lives.
Yes. Amen.
They never doubted God's power to deliver them. But let me move now to the basic point of the message. And oh, this morning, if we forget everything I said, I hope you won't forget this. It came to the point after saying our God is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace. But if he doesn't deliver us, we still are not going to bow. But if not, do you get that? These men were saying that our faith is so deep and that we've found something so dear and so precious that nothing can turn us away from it. Our God is able to deliver us, but if not, this simply means, my friends, that the ultimate test of one's faith is his ability to say, but if not. You see, there is what you may call an if faith, and there is a though faith, and the permanent.
Now, one of the things that Dr. King was talking about faith, and I'm going to talk tonight. We had talking about the money that was given. Black folks have never had a hand up. Now, let me explain what I'm saying. We was brought over in slavery. We worked in Mississippi, we worked in Louisiana, we worked in Virginia. We made the South rich with tobacco, with corn, with cotton. And the South don't care about us. All of us don't give a damn. Blacks are dying. And the same mentality that brought us over is holding us back now. And we can't see it. We want a Cadillac and a white woman in a new car. We all right. I hate to say that, but I'm looking at reality. Black men, where are you at? Black women, where are you at? Children growing up killing each other. Babies having babies. We're better than that. We are better than that. And some of the preachers is worse. They won't tell the truth. So in 2021, we got to be better to ourselves. We got to be better to what's happening. Thank God for black women. If it wasn't for black women, we'd be lost. Black women went in and worked in the kitchen and brought things out. And it seemed like now people steal black folks that get a little money. They forget where they come from. They forget slavery. They forget what happened in Arkansas, Mississippi, the many that was lynched, that was burnt at the stake. If you don't tell young folks about it, they won't know about it. The Jews said never again. Hitler killed 6 million and burned them in the oven. And you got people going by their playbook that's sitting in Washington. Their daddy was a slave owner, so the kids are the slave owner. Ku Klux Klan said about 5 years ago, coming out of the white road, we putting blacks' robes on in the courts, and we're going to put suits on and go to Washington. And they did it. Why do you think blacks right now in America is at the bottom of the totem pole? Anybody can come from any country. They recognize that you're not recognized. I want to tell you this. Until we make our minds up that we're going to do it ourselves, and we stop begging people to give us a job and create our job, right now, New York, Chicago, any city, if you go to the black neighborhood, it ain't no black business. You got an Arab. You got an Indian. You might have a Jew. The Jew didn't turn it over to somebody. Now, when you go get a hotel, back in the day, they had blacks had hotels. They ain't got them. The Indians got them. So what we going to college for? What we trying to learn at college? Everybody can't be a doctor. Everybody can't be a lawyer. We got to have some plumbers. We got to have some bricklayers. We got to have some cobblers. Okay? But you can't get them when they kicked out of school. They stand in the street trying to rob a grandma for $2. And the man on the dope is selling dope because he's getting the dope from Washington, D.C. The guns coming in through the Rifle Association, and ain't nobody saying nothing about it. Ain't nobody going to save us but us. Let me say that again. Ain't nobody going to save us but us. This is a long quarter of hate and racism. This is racism at the core. This is racism, people. You don't know. This is racism. Now, let me help you out. You ain't going to like me. Homosexuality is racism. If I can get all the men to be sissies, where the babies coming from? Here's a woman grabbing down, ain't nothing like. Romans 1 and 26 tell you. God turned them over to a reprobate mind. You guys would understand. I can't justify it. I can't justify a woman snatching a baby out of her womb and say it's all right. She's a murderer. She's a murderer. Huh? And I'm telling you, just like a boy out there shooting somebody, when you snatch that baby out of your womb, you're a murderer. That's the real thing. The murder is walking among us. Now you're going to have some church. You got murders up in the church. Pastors pimping and getting airplanes. And you got the women that killed 5 or 6 babies. Talking about, come on, God. He ain't coming, baby. And, Abaddon, the devil going to come because you already, your wound is a walking cemetery. Oh, y'all ain't lacking me tonight. That's keeping it real. And ain't nobody got to hurt you. You're hurting yourself. You know, that's... Let me play this right here. Let me play a little of this.
Maybe
this might wake you up.
To understand this, you have to go back to what young brother here referred to as the house Negro and the field Negro back during slavery. There was two kinds of slaves. There was the house Negro and the field Negro. The house Negro, they lived in the house with master. They dressed pretty good. They ate good because they ate his food because he left. They lived in the attic or the basement, but still they lived near their master. And they loved their master more than the master loved himself. They would give their life to save their master's house quicker than the master would. The house Negro, if the master said, we got a good house here, the house Negro said, yeah, we got a good house here. Whenever the master said we, he said we. That's how you can tell a house Negro. If the master's house caught on fire, the house Negro would fight harder to put the blaze out than the master would. If the master got sick, the house Negro would say, what's the matter, boss? We sick. We sick. He identified himself with his master more than his master identified with himself. And if you came to the house Negro and said, let's run away, let's escape, let's separate, that house Negro would look at you and say, man, you crazy. What you mean separate? Where is there a better house than this? Where can I wear better clothes than this? Where can I eat better food than this? That was that house Negro. In those days, he was called a house nigger. And that's what we call him today because we still got some house niggers running around here. house Negro. Loves his master. He wants to live near him. He'll pay three times as much as the house is worth just to live near his master. And then brag about, I'm the only Negro out here.
I'm the only one on my job. I'm the only one in this school. You're nothing but a house Negro. And if someone come to you right now and say, let's separate, you say the same thing that the house Negro said on the plantation. What you mean, separate? From America? This good white man? Where you gonna get a better job than you get here? I mean, this is what you say. I ain't left nothing in Africa. That's what you say. Why, you left your mind in Africa. On that same plantation, there was the field Negro. The field Negro, those were the masses. There was always more Negroes in the field than there was Negroes in the house. The Negro in the field caught hell. He ate leftovers. In the house, they ate high up on the hog. The Negro in the field didn't get nothing but what was left of the insides of the hog. They call them chitlins nowadays. In those days, they call them what they were, guts. That's what you were, a gut eater. And some of you are still gut eaters. The field Negro was beaten from morning till night. He lived in a shack, in a hut. He wore cast-off clothes. And he hated his master. I say he hated his master. He was intelligent. That house Negro loved his master. But that field Negro, remember, they were in the majority. And they hated the master. When the house caught on fire, he didn't try and put it out. That field Negro prayed for a wind, for a breeze. When the master got sick, the field Negro prayed that he died. If someone come to the field Negro and said, let's separate, let's run, he didn't say, where are we going? He said, any place is better than here. You got field Negroes in America today. I'm a field Negro. The masses are the field Negroes. When they see this man's house on fire, you don't hear these little Negroes talking about our government is in trouble. They say the government is in trouble. Imagine a Negro, our government. I even heard one say, our astronauts. They won't even let him near the plant. And our astronauts. Our Navy. That's a Negro that's out of his mind. That's a Negro that's out of his mind. Just as the slave master in that day used Tom, the house Negro, to keep the field Negroes in check, the same old slave master today has Negroes who are nothing but modern Uncle Toms, 20th century Uncle Toms, to keep you and me in check, keep us under control, keep us passive and peaceful and nonviolent. That's Tom making you nonviolent. It's like when you go to the dentist and the man is going to take your tooth. You're going to fight him when he starts pulling. So they squirt some stuff in your jaw called Novocaine. to make you think they're not doing anything to you. So you sit there, and because you got all that Novocaine in your jaw, you suffer peacefully. Blood running all down your jaw. And you don't know what's happening. Because someone has taught you to suffer peacefully. The white man do the same thing to you in the street. When he don't want to put knots on your head and take advantage of you and don't have to be afraid of you fighting back, to keep you from fighting back, he get these old religious Uncle Toms to teach you and me that just like Novocaine, suffer peacefully. Don't stop suffering, just suffer peacefully. As Reverend Cleve pointed out, let your blood flow in the streets. This is a shame. And you know he's a Christian preacher. If it's a shame to him, you know what it is to me. Because nothing in our book, the Quran, as you call it, Koran, teaches us to suffer peacefully. Our religion teaches us to be intelligent, be peaceful, be courteous, obey the law, respect everyone. But if someone puts his hand on you, send him to the cemetery. That's a good religion. In fact, that's that old-time religion. That's the one that Ma and Pa used to talk about. An eye for an eye, and a tooth for a tooth, and a head for a head, and a life for a life. That's a good religion. And then anybody, no one resents that kind of religion being taught but a wolf who intends to make you his meal. This is the way it is with the white man in America. He's a wolf and you a sheep. Anytime a shepherd, a pastor, teach you and me not to run from the white man, and at the same time teach us don't fight the white man, he's a traitor to you and me. Don't lay down our life all by itself. No. Preserve your life. It's the best thing you got. And if you got to give it up, let it be even Stephen. The slave master took Tom and dressed him well and fed him well and even gave him a little education, a literal education. Gave him a long coat and a top hat and made all the other slaves look up to him. Then he used Tom to control them. The same strategy that was used in those days is used today by the same white man. He take a Negro, so-called Negro, and make him prominent. Build him up. Publicize him. Make him a celebrity. And then he becomes a spokesman for Negroes and a Negro leader. I would like to just mention one thing else quickly, and that is The method that the white man uses, how the white man uses these big guns or Negro leaders against the black revolution. They're not a part of the black revolution. They're used against the black revolution. When Martin Luther King failed to desegregate Albany, Georgia, the civil rights struggle in America reached its low point. King became bankrupt almost as a leader. Plus, even financially, the Southern Christian Leadership Conference was in financial trouble. Plus, it was in trouble, period, with the people when they failed to desegregate Albany, Georgia. Other Negro civil rights leaders of so-called national stature became fallen idols. As they became fallen idols, began to lose their prestige and influence, local Negro leaders began to stir up the masses. In Cambridge, Maryland, Gloria Richardson. In Danville, Virginia, and other parts of the country, local leaders began to stir up our people at the grassroots level. This was never done by these Negroes whom you recognize of national stature. They controlled you, but they never incited you or excited you. They controlled you. They contained you. They kept you on the plantation. As soon as King failed in Birmingham, Negroes took to the streets. King got out and went out to California to a big rally and raised about, I don't know how many thousands of dollars. Come to Detroit and had a march and raised some more thousands of dollars. And recall, right after that, Wilkins attacked King, accused King and the Corps of starting trouble everywhere and then making the NAACP get him out of jail and spend a lot of money, and then he accused King and Corps of raising all the money and not paying it back. This happened. I got it in documented evidence in the newspaper. Roy started attacking King, and King started attacking Roy, and Farmer started attacking both of them. And as these Negroes of national stature began to attack each other, they began to lose their control of the Negro masses. And Negroes was out there in the streets. They was talking about, we're going to march on Washington. By the way, right at that time, Birmingham had exploded, and the Negroes in Birmingham, remember, they also exploded. They began to stab the crackers in the back and bust them upside their head. Yes, they did. That's when Kennedy sent in the troops down in Birmingham. So, and right after that, Kennedy got on the television and said, this is a moral issue. That's when he said he's going to put out a civil rights bill. And when he mentioned civil rights bill and the Southern crackers started talking about they were going to boycott it or filibuster, then the Negroes started talking about what? We're going to march on Washington, march on the Senate, march on the White House, march on the Congress and tie it up, bring it to a halt. Don't let the government proceed. They even said they were going to go out to the airport and lay down on the runway and don't let no airplanes land. I'm telling you what they said. That was revolution. That was revolution. That was the black revolution. It was the grassroots out there in the street. Scared the white man to death. Scared the white power structure in Washington, D.C. to death. I was there. When they found out that this black steamroller was going to come down on the Capitol, they called in Wilkins. They called in Randolph. They called in these national Negro leaders that you respect and told them, call it off. Kennedy said, look, y'all letting this thing go too far. And old Tom said, boss, I can't stop it because I didn't start it. I'm telling you what they said. They said, I'm not even in it, much less at the head of it. They said, these Negroes are doing things on their own. They're running ahead of us. And that old shrewd fox, he said, well, if you all aren't in it, I'll put you in it. I'll put you at the head of it. I'll endorse it. I'll welcome it. I'll help it. I'll join it. A matter of hours went by. They had a meeting at the Carlisle Hotel in New York City. The Carlisle Hotel is owned by the Kennedy family. That's the hotel Kennedy spent the night at two nights ago. Belongs to his family. A philanthropic society headed by a white man named Stephen Currier called all the top civil rights leaders together at the Carlisle Hotel and told them that by you all fighting each other, you're destroying the civil rights movement. And since you're fighting over money from white liberals, let us set up what's known as the Council for United Civil Rights Leadership. Let's form this council, and all the civil rights organizations will belong to it. and will use it for fundraising purposes. Let me show you how tricky the white man is. And as soon as they got it formed, they elected Whitney Young as the chairman. And who you think became the co-chairman? Stephen Currier, the white man. A millionaire. Powell was talking about it down at the Cobo today. This is what he was talking about. Powell knows it happened. Randolph knows it happened. Wilkins knows it happened. King knows it happened. Every one of that so-called Big Six, they know what happened. Once they formed it, with the white man over it, he promised them and gave them $800,000 to split up between the Big Six. And told them that after the march was over, they'd give them $700,000 more. $1.5 million split up between leaders that you've been following, going to jail for, crying crocodile tears for, and they've nothing but Frank James and Jesse James and what you call it, brothers. Soon as they got the setup organized, the white man made available to them top public relations experts. Opened the news media across the country at their disposal. And then they began to project these Big Six as the leaders of the march. Originally, they weren't even in the march. You was talking this march talk on Hastings Street. Is Hastings Street still here? On Hastings Street. You was talking the march talk on Lenox Avenue. And down on, Fillmore Street, and Central Avenue, and 42nd Street, and 63rd Street. That's where the march talk was being talked. But the white man put the Big Six ahead of it. Made them the march. They became the march. They took it over. And the first move they made after they took it over, they invited Walter Reuther, a white man. They invited a priest. A rabbi and an old white preacher. Yes, an old white preacher. The same white element that put Kennedy in power. Labor, the Catholics, the Jews, and liberal Protestants. Same clique that put Kennedy in power joined the March on Washington. It's just like when you got some coffee that's too black, which means it's too strong. What you do? You integrate it with cream. You make it weak. If you pour too much cream in, you won't even know you ever had coffee. It used to be hot, it becomes cool. It used to be strong, it becomes weak. It used to wake you up, now it'll put you to sleep. This is what they did with the March on Washington. They joined it. They didn't integrate it, they infiltrated it. They joined it, became a part of it, took it over. And as they took it over, it lost its militancy. They ceased to be angry. They ceased to be hot. They ceased to be uncompromising. Why, it even ceased to be a march. It became a picnic, a circus. Nothing but a circus with clowns and all. You had one right here in Detroit. I saw it on television with clowns leading it, white clowns and black clowns. I know you don't like what I'm saying, but I'm going to tell you anyway. Because I can prove what I'm saying. If you think I'm telling you wrong, you bring me Martin Luther King and A. Philip Randolph and James Farmer and those other three. And see if they'll deny it over the microphone. No, it was a sellout. It was a takeover. When James Baldwin came in from Paris, they wouldn't let him talk. Because they couldn't make him go by the script. Bert Lancaster. Read the speech that Baldwin was supposed to make. They wouldn't let Baldwin get up there, because they know Baldwin liable to say anything. They controlled it so tight, they told those Negroes what time to hit town, how to come, where to stop, what sign to carry, what song to sing, what speech they could make, and what speech.